Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. In honor of Valentine's Day, we wanted to share with you the love story of one of our favorite couples, political activists Phyllis Lyon and the late Del Martin. They were founding members of the first national organization for lesbians, the Daughters of Bilitis, in 1955. They were together for 55 years before they were finally able to legally wed in 2008, just a few months before Del died, and before California voters passed Proposition 8. They had also married in February 2004 when San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom ordered City Hall to grant marriage licenses to same-sex couples in spite of state laws against such unions. His move set the stage for the legal wrangling now before the U.S. Supreme Court. Del and Phyllis always considered Valentine's Day their anniversary. In this 2006 interview conducted around their kitchen table in San Francisco, Phyllis and Del reminisced about falling in love and what it meant to be a lesbian couple in the 1950s. When I asked what life was like as a lesbian in 1950, Phyllis said she didn't know she was one until after she met Del.
I had no idea. Del knew she was a lesbian, and that's how I found out.
How did you happen to meet each other?
We were working at the same place up in Seattle. It has to be fate. I was working on a newspaper up in Chico, and I got tired of the little small town stuff, so I thought I'd go somewhere else, and I decided to go up to Seattle, which is where we had lived once, and my sister was born there back in the 30s. I ended up working for a publishing company that published magazines around construction. Later, they hired Del, and so because she was coming from San Francisco, and I had lived down here too, was real excited. In fact, all the women were excited because we knew that this San Francisco gay divorcee, without knowing anything about all that, was coming up, and we were just looking forward to it.
Del, why did you move up to Seattle at that time?
Well, I moved up to Seattle because I wanted to leave San Francisco, and I was offered a job up there, and it would pay more money than I was getting here.
I really had no idea. She didn't just come up and say, "Hi there, everybody, I'm a lesbian." But we got together, and I had a party over at my apartment with all the people from work.
When the party's getting the glow up, singing fills the air. In the shack of the night, when the doings are right, you can tell them I'll be there.
She sat out in the kitchenette with the guys smoking cigars, and they were trying to teach her how to tie a tie, which I thought was pretty weird.
That a woman would want to learn how to tie a tie, or,
well,
or what?
Or smoke a cigar. But that was all right. So then the next day, she had a hangover, and she called me. Because she had discovered that at that time, Washington had these blue laws, and the bars were not open on Sundays. Although she coerced a tavern person to
give her a beer. Yeah, the tavern was right across the street from
where you were staying.
Where I was staying. So I went over there and asked him if he could give me a beer, and he said, "I can't do that. This is... it's Sunday." And I said, "So what?" You know, he says, "We can't sell any liquor." I said, "Well, I don't consider beer liquor." And he said, "I don't care what you think about it. I can't do it." But finally, I persuaded him to go. I said I was just so sick, and I was due to go someplace, and I just needed it so badly, and so on. So he finally slipped me one.
To make a long story short, we got to be good friends and so on. And I remember at some point she asked me about homosexuality, and I said, "I didn't see why people had to be so nasty about that. You know, I didn't see why people were being picked on and so on." And I vaguely had knowledge of Fred, a young man whom I went to high school with, who was in my drama class and who had committed suicide up in Sacramento. And I don't remember hearing the word homosexual around him, but there was something like it was in the air and you knew. And I thought that was a horrible thing that had happened. But we didn't go into the whole homosexual thing very much in our conversations. But what did finally happen, because of the laws in Seattle and in Washington, we became members of the press club. And they had cocktails. I mean, you'd go in and buy a drink, which you couldn't do in the other places. You had to... But you had to bring your own...
You brought your own bottle.
So anyhow, so Del and I and another woman we worked with were out one evening after work. We popped over to the press club and we're sitting there chattering about whatever and how the conversation got around to homosexuality, I have no idea. And one of us finally asked Del, how come you know so much about it?
And I said, because I am one. And then I thought, oh my God,
what have I done now, huh?
Well, anyway, so then we chatted about what that was all about and so on, and then we all went home. And for whatever reason, I don't know, I called everybody, all the women that I worked with, and told them.
That Del was a lesbian.
That Del was a lesbian. Because I thought it was the most exciting thing I'd heard in a long time.
So it wasn't like you were horrified. It was more like, wow, I can't
excited.
Wait to share this
yeah,
news.
Right, right. Yeah. Absolutely. And fortunately, it didn't do any harm at all, except with one woman whose husband. Jim said, well, as long as I was going to have anything to do with Del, that she couldn't have anything to do with me. But that was the only fallout from the whole thing. Except that then I knew that she was a lesbian, and then I was more curious, and I was... But I didn't want to do anything because I had this little habit of going after guys and getting them and then not wanting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that to happen with her. So I didn't get involved, but we went out a lot together and we went to the gay bar that was there and I met lesbians and so on. And then I decided, and then I had to leave Seattle. That was what created something. Because my sister and I had a promise that when she graduated from Cal, we would go on this trip, automobile trip around the country. And she was graduating. This was in 1952, I think. And we needed to do that, so I needed to leave Seattle. Well, that created all kinds of things. I discovered that another woman that I had been good friends with also was probably a lesbian. And, of course, I knew Del was. And so she eventually made a pass at me before I left. Sort of a pass. We were sitting in my living room.
Was it a pass, Del?
It was a pass.
It was a half pass, and I completed the pass.
All right.
I completed the pass.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway, that's the way the story goes.
From this happy day, no more blue songs, only hoop-de-doo songs. From this moment on, boy, you've got the love I need so much. Got the skin I love to touch. Got the arms to hold me tight. Got the sweet lips to kiss me goodnight.
And so we had sex that night. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that didn't commit us to anything. And then when I left to go come back down to San Francisco, she rode with me. I had this little 1939 Plymouth Coupe. So we drove down together. And then my sister and I started out on this trip. And then I missed her.
How long were you gone for?
Well, we were gone for longer than we expected because my sister, Tricia, came down with polio along the way. And we ended up in New Orleans. And she was there for about a month in the hospital before she could come back. I had called Del a lot on the road when we were still driving, you know, along. And
she also called collect.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have phone cards then or anything like that. And to make a long story even shorter, we came back on the train, thanks to the March of Dimes. Anyhow, and so then she was in the hospital over here for a while. I was staying with my folks out at Stonestown. And Del was still in Seattle. And so then she'd come down and we'd go out together. But at this point, we weren't telling anybody. I wasn't telling anybody. Apparently, my father had had a girlfriend at some point in his life before he met my mother. And she had ditched him for a woman. So he was not very fond of the lesbian concept and so on. And I guess he said something to Mom, and she asked me if Del was a lesbian. And I said, well, of course, how could you say a thing like that? Never, 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 never. And because, you know, you didn't really do that in those days. Once you knew what could happen.
What kind of consequences are you talking about?
Well, you could lose your job, you could lose your family, some families, they threw the
kids out,
and
well, that still happens today, but maybe more so then.
More so,
and he didn't have any rights. Well, you didn't.
You didn't have any rights at all.
Yeah.
You could be evicted from your house, or your apartment, or whatever. I mean, you know, nobody needed to put up with you at all.
Right.
And a lot of the gay men, in particular, the cops would take them behind the
station
and beat the hell out of them and say, get out of town. And they said, and I mean get out of town, get out of our territory or you'll be sorry.
So, and then there was one time when she got locked out of her mother's apartment house, where she forgot to have the key and didn't want to wake her mother up at 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was. And so I brought her home, and we slept together in the room I was sleeping in, but I locked the door. And that got mother all upset, but whatever. At some point, you asked me to, if we couldn't become partners, didn't you?
Yeah.
You proposed, as it were, somewhere along the line. And I wasn't sure that I was ready to settle down. You know, she was still up in Seattle and I was down here. Just about the time up in Seattle where she had decided, and her friends had probably helped her decide, that she might as well give up. She wasn't going to get anywhere. I decided that, by golly, I thought it would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. In the cool, cool, cool of the evening, tell them I'll be there.
After we moved in together, which was in 1953, down on Castor, between 19th and 20th.
Which was not the gay neighborhood
it
is today.
No, it was not. It was.
What was it like then? Was it pretty much
working class? Yeah, working class.
Mostly Irish?
Irish and Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Most Holy Redeemer Parish, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You just didn't know. I remember that before I moved in with Del, I found the apartment before she came down. So I had been around that area for a week or so anyhow, and my normal apparel was jeans and either a flannel shirt, or I had some of my dad's cloth shirts. You know? So I'm running up and down. Never thought a thing about it until she got here and we moved in together. And then suddenly I'm going, oh my God, everybody will know I'm a lesbian. You know, I hadn't changed one iota from what I had been doing the week before.
You'd always been wearing jeans and flannel shirts. Yeah. And that wasn't unusual for straight women to wear that in those days.
No, not unusual at all. And then we went, you know where the pendulum is. We were in there one night, and they were dancing. There was dancing. And I guess I was dancing with some guy.
Was it a different bar then, or had it been a pendulum that long?
No, it was the pendulum. It wasn't gay.
There were
all the bars up and down the Castor were there. Because we started out one night. Well, hang on, let me finish this one. I had gotten my hair cut, not real short, but short. I was tired of it getting in my face. And he went to know if I was a dyke. So there was awareness, you know, and I, of course, denied it. Anyhow, then one night we decided that what we were going to do was to go out and have a drink at all the bars. You know, go into all the bars and have a drink. And we ended up at the...
One drink, right.
Bar hopping.
Yeah, in the Castro. And so we got up to Twin Peaks, and we were sitting at the bar and chattering away. And we dumped the one drink thing, and we ordered another drink.
Which was a mistake.
Right. And we also, apparently both of us had to go to the bathroom, which was upstairs.
Yeah.
So we did, and the next thing we knew, somebody was pounding on the door and telling us to get the hell out of there. And apparently we had been talking at the bar loud enough that somebody could hear whatever it was we were talking about, which had to do with lesbians, I'm sure. And they figured we were up there having sex or something. I don't know. They threw us out. So that's our big story for that. We went home, I think, after that.
You're tuned to Out in the Bay. My guests, Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, founded The Ladder, a magazine, and the Daughters of Bilitis back in 1955. They were also the first couple to be married in the February and March 2004 gay weddings in San Francisco. Did it change at all for you how you felt about your relationship to actually go and get married in a marriage that was recognized, albeit briefly, but recognized by the state of California?
Well, I don't know that it made us feel any different about each other. I think we felt good that it had happened.
Yes, and I guess we saw it more as a political move. The thing is, as we looked back on it, we found that all along, heterosexuals have been trying to get us to marry. You know, first there was the CRH.
Council on Religion and the Homosexual.
Yeah, Council on Religion and the Homosexual. And the ministers there were starting to do
civil unions.
Civil unions, or what they called
commitment
ceremonies.
And when? How far back did that organization?
Started in 64.
Okay, yeah. So for quite a long while, there have been heterosexual folks trying to help this happen.
Yeah.
Right, and not only that, but the Chronicle wrote a...
In 1970,
the editorial.
Chronicle had an editorial in which it said that, or suggested that the state legislature pass a law allowing same-sex marriage.
And John Burton, at some point, brought up, when he was in the legislature, brought up a bill. The thing was that none of us were interested in getting married at that point. The community was more interested in laws that would keep us from being fired from our jobs or thrown out of our houses or thrown in jail and stuff like that. And all this time, none of us were very interested. A lot of us were feeling that marriage was an old kind of silly thing, and it was patriarchal, and it was men getting power over women, and we didn't want to have anything to do with it.
There are still
people like
who feel that it's sort of a cop out to, you know, we don't need to buy into the assimilationist, exactly.
And, but on the other hand, without being able to get married, we didn't have all the rights and privileges and responsibilities that heterosexuals had. And that made us second-class citizens. And, you know, we said, we don't want to be second-class citizens. And so we really supported all along legislation to make changes in California.
So you supported the concept, but for you it wasn't one of your high priorities.
Right.
Even politically, you had more important things during the 60s
and
70s.
That was true for everyone, I think.
Yeah.
I think we shifted our focus on marriage more recently because of Massachusetts, because of what was going on, and because of the 1001 or whatever it is privileges that you get with being married, the benefits.
When do you consider your anniversary date? What do you peg it to? And how many years has it been now?
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
That's when we moved in together.
Yeah.
Down in on Castro Street.
That's romantic.
They'll figure that we'd never forget it.
If you did it on the day like that.
She managed to get here by 11 o'clock that night, the night she came down by bus from Seattle. And
24 hours on the bus.
Oh, wow.
And I met her down there. I got a car. And we spent 2 years trying to find lesbians to be friends with. And you couldn't just go ask somebody if they were lesbian. At least we didn't think you could. And I was doing temporary work as a stenographer, typist, whatever you want to call it. And I remember one place where I was just positive that this woman who ran the lunch place in this building was a lesbian, and I kept saying to her things like, oh, I had a really gay time over the weekend, and nothing ever happened. I mean, she had on a flannel shirt. And
did she have on jeans?
Yes. And it was my considered opinion that any woman that was wearing a a flannel shirt, especially, what's that company that makes them?
Pendleton?
Pendleton, yeah, especially a Pendleton was a lesbian. Yeah. But we finally met two gay guys, Rick and Jerry, who lived around the corner from us. And we made friends, the four of us, and we started doing stuff together. And they knew more people. And so somewhere along the line in 1955, we went to an after-hours party somewhere, and we met a lesbian. And we must have had time to talk to her and, kind of get to know her and her to know us a little bit and so on. And she also had our phone number somehow. And she was the one who called us in around September of that year, 1955, and said, "Would you like to join us? We're three couples, there's six of us, and we want to start a secret lesbian society. And we'd like to have you join us." And we, of course, said absolutely positively, yes, 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 mm-hmm. because we immediately were going to meet five more lesbians than we knew already.
That was Phyllis Lyon with the late Del Martin from a 2006 interview in their San Francisco home. We've just heard part one of a two-part series. In part two, that secret lesbian society that Phyllis just referred to started as a social club, a place where women could dance together without being arrested. It became the nation's first lesbian political organization, the Daughters of Bilitis. In part two, Phyllis and Del also tell us about the New Year's drag ball in 1965 that helped convince the ACLU to finally take gay rights seriously.
They said you can't have men dressed in women's clothes on the sidewalk. It will upset the public.
You can hear this entire mini-documentary, parts one and two, on our website, outinthebay.org. It's on the Playing Favorites page, where we've gathered a dozen of our favorite shows from 8 years of producing Out in the Bay. Just click the Best of Playing Favorites icon on the bottom half of our homepage, outinthebay.org. While you're there, we hope you'll consider a donation to keep Out in the Bay thriving. As an independent production, we do rely on community support. Your donations really do help sustain us, and we thank you. That's outinthebay.org, where you can also get free weekly podcasts. We round out our Valentine's special with perspectives on love from across the spectrum of age, gender, and sexual orientation, collected by Kaylin Jennings, a youth producer with Out Loud Radio.
Love to me is my family.
God is love.
Love is a word.
Love for.
To like.
Pizza.
Feel good about someone.
People say I love you all the time, but you know what I mean? Do they,
yeah.
Do they really love?
I think love is everything. I think that that's what everybody's looking for. I think that's what everybody's trying to do. And I think it's the basis of everything.
Hello. I am Alette.
I'm Oscar Vidaure.
I'm 22.
My name's Marita.
My name is Angie Costaldo.
I'm a junior. I'm 17.
My name is Bobby Costaldo from Colorado.
I'm queer.
I'm 38.
Yeah.
K to the R-Y-S-T-L-E. Yeah, you know it's me, the one and only cutie.
To me, love is something that's...
To me, love is true acceptance of all people.
It's something that everybody has within themselves. People use others as, objects to, bring out the love that they already have within themselves.
I think love is a feeling of oneness and appreciation with things around me, and seeing that feeling of realizing that I'm not really separate from anything around me.
It's just something that comes out more easily when you're in a close relationship with somebody.
And love to me is being able to experience this wonderful world every day.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of pretty much always in love, sometimes with people, but mostly just with strange beautiful things.
There's a variety of different kinds of love.
I guess there's romantic love, and then there's love that you have for your family members, love that you have for your friends, maybe love for animals.
I feel like there is a fluidity between those different types of love.
The two categories that people would think of is like romantic love and like friendship love. And honestly, to me, there's just love.
I guess at different points in your life, you require different things out of different loving relationships.
It's the way that you would affect my life, not how I love you or how you love me. It's more what your role is in my life that determines romantic love from friendship love.
I actually think that, all love comes from the same source. I think that we just define it and categorize it in different ways in our minds.
So I don't really think that love is necessarily immortal.
If you're too scared to open up, then you're obviously going to keep building up these walls and you won't ever get that love. Nobody likes feeling vulnerable. It's hard loving somebody.
Sometimes the way that I hear people talk about relating to someone that they're in love with is a little scary to me. I worry that love then gets made out to be just another thing that we should have or own rather than like an experience or like an active exchange between two people.
When I was at the Grateful Dead with my husband and my daughter, and I just looked into my husband's eyes and we truly connected because the music was flowing through both of us at the same time. And I think that we were truly in love at that
moment of connection when I'm appreciating something, whether it's a person or an animal or a thing, where our beauty is seeing like the parts of ourselves that are in each other.
I don't know. You just get that feeling like everything's at peace, like your body just relaxes. It just finds peace in somebody's eyes when you feel like you can see their soul.
I think that we are all manifestations of love, and there's always love to be appreciated.
I guess that's one of the ways for me to really tell if I'm in love with someone or not, is when I can look into their eyes and I can see who they are, and I fall in love with who they are.
Maybe I'm not ready for love.
Hopefully one day the world will come to one love.
Love is all. Love is just, it's really the most important thing. And I mean it when I say it's like the most natural thing that a person could do. Like, I believe we come into this world knowing nothing. Not how to do anything, not knowing of anything, and the only thing that we're inclined to do is to love.
Ooh, someone cute. Let's go.
Those perspectives on love came to us through Out Loud Radio, a queer youth radio training program. You can hear more from Out Loud Radio at outloudradio.org. The producer of that piece was Kaylin Jennings. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. Heard Thursdays at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on KALW.org worldwide and on 91.7 FM in the Bay Area. Listen anytime you want on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can find 6 months' worth of archives, sign up for free weekly podcasts, and take us with you on your mobile device by signing up for Stitcher. That's right, Stitcher, the application that lets you download radio programs to your mobile devices. It's all free. It's all on our website, outinthebay.org. Hey, Out in the Bay has been nominated to benefit from the San Francisco Frontrunners annual Pride Run this June. So if you know of any frontrunners, that's the Queer Running Club, encourage them to vote for Out in the Bay, won't you? Please do it soon. Voting ends tomorrow night. And join them for a run. The San Francisco Frontrunners meets Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. at Stowe Lake and Golden Gate Park for runs and walks. There's an East Bay Frontrunners and Walkers Club, too. They meet at varying locations. You can find both clubs online. Just search Frontrunners. It's fun. And they go to brunch after. Want to hear some love songs? San Francisco singer-songwriter Mark Etheridge performs at the Metropolitan Community Church, a.k.a. the MCC, the Gay Church, at 150 Eureka Street in the Castro, Saturday night, March 2nd. He'll be playing songs from his new CD, Change Coming. It includes Hot Tub, which we'll go out with part of tonight.
It's a beautiful San Francisco night.
Concert info at markethridge.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening to Out in the Bay.
Tell me what's the